This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. One of the biggest names associated with ragtime music is Scott Joplin. And in St. Louis, the Delmar Boulevard flat where the iconic composer and pianist made his home here is a state historic site. It's also where monthly live concerts called Ragtime Rendezvous have been held since the 1990s. The next of those gatherings happens soon, on August 3rd to be precise. At Monday's concert, the Oliver Smith Incomparables will perform rags like this one from their upcoming album, Stomp Your Stuff. That's the Oliver Smith Incomparables playing the tune Grace and Beauty, a classic ragtime piano composition by James Scott. The Ragtime Rendezvous series has done significant work in boosting appreciation of ragtime's history and its influence on other music genres. But for St. Louis Ragtime Initiative co-founder Ethan Linewood, there's ever more room to put people in the know, especially when it comes to St. Louis's connections to ragtime. And he joins us now to talk about that. Ethan, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
And also with us is someone we just heard in that clip of Grace and Beauty, musician Colin Hancock, a member of the Oliver Smith Incomparables. They'll be playing at the August 3rd rendezvous at the Scott Joplin House here in STL. Colin, welcome to you as well.
Hello, so glad to be here.
So, Ethan, I'd like to start with you. People are more than likely familiar with Scott Joplin's ragtime tune, The Entertainment, that is, The Entertainer. Some may know it as the Ice Cream Truck Song, depending on where you grew up. And our producer, Emily Woodbury, asked you to select some of the most underrated St. Louis rags. And you picked Tom Turpin's composition, St. Louis Rag. Let's hear some of that. Tell us a bit about Tom Turpin and his contributions to the St. Louis music scene.
Absolutely. Well, Tom Turpin is known as the father of St. Louis ragtime. He owned a bar called the Rosebud, which is probably where the FBI building is, right across the street from the new soccer stadium. Mm. And that was a real center for ragtime's development. It was really, really in some ways the center, especially around the turn of the century, 1900 to 1903, 4, when we had the World's Fair. Tom Turpin was a great big fella, and he didn't like to sit down at the piano because his belly got in the way, and he put his piano on cinder blocks and would play. But he was actually the first African-American to ever publish a rag, and that was called the Harlem Rag in 1897.
And as I understand, the Rosebud was moved to the Scott Joplin House, and that's where the Ragtime Rendezvous is hosted, right?
Yes, that's correct. Well, it wasn't like so much moved, it was sort of recreated in a sense. It's the Joplin's House event space, but it has a sort of Victorian bar feel.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of pianos being put on cinder blocks, Ethan, you specialize in playing barrel house blues, and I'd like to give folks a bit of an idea about what that genre sounds like and how you play it.
Thank you.
And that was a recording of you, Ethan Leinwand, performing the Farish Street Jive at a recent concert that took place at the Focal Point in Maplewood. So, Ethan, what so appeals to you about Barrel House Blues, and what are Barrel House Blues?
Yeah. So Barrel House Blues is the kind of music that comes out of ragtime and sort of sets the way for boogie-woogie and styles like rock and roll, which came later. And I love Barrel House Blues because, well, it varies from region to region. Everyone, all the players had their own personal way of playing this music with so much expression and depth, and there's always a low-down blues feeling that I really connect to. And it's the kind of music that you can play in a bar, and it just makes the bar a fun place to be, and I love that kind of music.
Mm-hmm. Colin, we haven't heard from you just yet. Is there something about what we're hearing right now, you know, that also appeals to you as a trumpet player, but someone who obviously, you know, appreciates music of all kinds?
Absolutely. I mean, for one thing, Ethan is one of the greatest living piano players of this kind of music. So if we're just talking about Ethan alone, I just love hearing him play. But other than that, just with the music itself, just the drive, the rhythmic drive of it, especially in that left hand, really in a lot of ways emulates the sound of a band and the kind of feeling of a band playing ragtime and things like that. And I've always really loved that element of the sound of Barrel House Blues and ragtime and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Is there some other connection between Barrel House Blues and ragtime that, you know, is important to point out, Ethan?
Well, the important thing to know is that the blues sort of burst into popularity in the late 19-teens, 1914, 1915, and that is still very much in the ragtime era. We count the ragtime era as being roughly the first two decades of the 20th century. So they really informed each other. We tend to think of blues as a different thing, but in the early days of blues, it was steeped in ragtime language. Mm. And so I think that's the important thing to understand about this music. It really comes out of ragtime.
Yeah. Colin, you were talking about sort of the strains of ragtime, but what is it that makes ragtime, you know, musical elements of it, especially compared to genres like jazz and blues?
Yeah, well, I mean, a big part of it, I think, that set it apart from the music that preceded it was the syncopation within it, you know, where the rhythmic emphasis was felt in the music. I think also just the combination of those different kinds of music that came before it. I mean, the cakewalk really was sort of the form of energetic or hot music that preceded ragtime immediately and kind of had a bit of a gray area into ragtime. There are many tunes, you know, among the earliest recordings ever made that are cakewalks, you know, on paper. But when people listen to them, they say, oh, that sounds like a rag. And it's because of the, you know, the introduction of those syncopations and rhythmic devices and feeling and things like that. But, you know, there are many things. There are many different influences and kinds of music that led to what became ragtime. And then I think after the fact, later on, the difference between ragtime and jazz really was there was more improvisation and individual kind of room for that kind of expression in jazz. But even there was a real kind of time period of a gray area, and now it's almost affectionately referred to as ragga jazz by people.
Oh.
Which is, you know, I love that name. That's an actual name that a band of students from the University of Nebraska gave their band, the Southern Ragga Jazz Band, in 1918 or 19, because even they, at the time, could tell there was a bit of a crossover.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking today with musician Colin Hancock. He's the lead trumpeter for the Oliver Smith Incomparables and also with the co-founder of the St. Louis Ragtime Initiative, Ethan Leinwand. Now, Colin, we heard your band at the start of this segment, and just before we reintroduced you all, we got this bit of jazz, ragga jazz background and context. I'd like to play another of your songs, and this is something from your upcoming album, Stomp Your Stuff, which I believe will be released next month. Here's Sansu Strut. And that's the Oliver Smith Incomparables playing Sans-Souci Strut. So, Colin, I understand that this song is a classic jazz tune, but does it have elements of ragtime in it insofar as the way you and your band perform it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the chord changes and the structure of the tune itself is very much what many people would call a folk rag or a folk kind of folky ragtime form. Just a very what some people might now call simple set of chord changes that you find in a lot of ragtime going back even to the late 1890s. And I think it's interesting to point out the sort of line between that and jazz, because you can also find rags in early country music and what they called old-time music that have those kind of chord changes, or even, you know, military bands playing ragtime with those kind of chord changes from back then. It's almost like the genre of ragtime itself creates a framework from which you can do all sorts of stuff in other genres of music too, and I think it's almost like a Venn diagram musically.
Mm-hmm. When producer Emily Woodbury, Colin, asked you about some of your favorite St. Louis rags, your mind went to some early 20th century recordings. We're talking 1910s. I'd like to play a couple of tunes you selected. Let's start with a classic that many of us will recognize, Maple Leaf Rag. But before we listen, Colin, what is special about this recording of the tune?
Absolutely. So this recording was made in 1916 by a St. Louis group led by St. Louis piano player Walter Gustav Gus Henschen. And he was actually a pupil of Scott Joplin's. Now, Scott Joplin had many pupils, and some of those pupils made records, but Henschen was the only one, while Joplin was alive, to make a recording of a Joplin piece. And Henschen chose as that piece the famous Maple Leaf Rag.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear some of that tune. Here is Maple Leaf Rag, recorded by Gus Henschen, Banjo Orchestra. So with this song, I mean, how would St. Louisans at the time have heard this tune? You know, would they have mostly heard it live? Might they have also heard it through a recording, specifically this one?
Absolutely. I mean, the tune, at least as far as Gus's own recollections, was something of, you know, nothing short of a theme song for the city, even in the teens. I mean, it was a internationally popular composition when it came out, you know, several years before this recording was made. But even in the 19-teens, when the Henschen band was playing all over town, they had a regular gig, for instance, at the Cardinals games, playing in between innings and things like that. And this was their tune to pep up the audience because they knew St. Louisans would love it so much and really felt it.
Mm-hmm. Ethan, is there anything that you would add to that that is, you know, very specific to St. Louis?
Yes, absolutely. So people would have been playing this song in all their homes, in their salons, and that's sort of the genius of Scott Joplin, is he took this syncopated music that was mainly improvised type form, and he wrote it down on the page with such elegance and beauty that people could take it home and then experience that syncopation. So that is how ragtime spread like wildfire. And Joplin had been in Sedalia, Missouri, when he published this rag, so just, you know, central Missouri, and pretty quickly thereafter came to St. Louis, and he came to St. Louis, was able to boast himself as the king of the ragtime writers after that, because this had sold so well. So that music we listened to, St. Louis Rag, in the very beginning, and you can hear in St. Louis Rag that Tom Turpin had learned from Joplin over the years that he'd been there, and so it really affected the whole town and the whole town's sense of classic ragtime that really made St. Louis the center of it.
Mm-hmm. How much of this kind of education and exposure is part of what motivated the founding of the St. Louis Ragtime Initiative, Ethan?
It's a big part of it. We feel like our town should be so proud of its ragtime history. Ragtime was the first American music. It spread across the country. It's those syncopations are the root of all American music. You don't have rock and roll, hip hop, funk. You don't have any of that without the music that was really happening here in St. Louis. And you know, it's something that our town needs to claim. It's a cultural claim that no one else can make. You know, we call The Entertainer the ice cream truck song, mm-hmm. but we shouldn't. We should call it St. Louis Ragtime. And I really feel like we think maybe Budweiser is our greatest export, but it's not. It's ragtime music. Right now, there are kids across the world practicing The Entertainer, and that's we have a great cultural claim to that. And I just feel like we can boost civic pride with this kind of music, even though it's weird old music.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to that point too, I mean, because ragtime originated in the 1890s, you know, in some respects, that is a really long time ago. I imagine it can be difficult to challenge notions that it is old-timey music, you know, like stuff you'd hear at theme parks or in period movies or theater productions. How much of that are you trying to, you know, dispossess people of with this initiative?
Well, I think we're in a really nice place right now, because so much of our understanding of ragtime now comes from a 70s revival, which is when the Sting came out and everyone got hip to Scott Joplin. But the 70s also were a time where we were kind of really nostalgic for the 1890s, which in sad ways like has hints of minstrelsy.
Yes.
And you can see that, and it kind of and it clouded that revival, and it still slowly persists, but we have a fresh ears. When I play this music for Gen Z, you know, they don't have that baggage. They don't know that thing, and what they're hearing more is like that it's kind of funky. Ragtime is funk music. It's downbeat music, and it gets people moving, and I see it all the time. And we have other locals like Royce Martin, who's playing ragtime, but also updating with swag time and rapping over it. And so we're just, you know, and he's a great example of taking pride in his local music and having fun with it. Now, he doesn't do swag time because he thinks ragtime needs it, as in ragtime's not good enough on its own. He's just following his own heart with what he likes to do with this music.
Mm-hmm. And we've had him on this show. He's very
doesn't
good
surprise
at that.
Me.
So this initiative is now about a year old. What are your hopes for the initiative in coming years?
Well, we hope to keep building. We're a group of musicians, you know, so we are, you know, what we're best at is making events and programming. So Ragtime Rendezvous is our flagship program, which the first hour of the Ragtime Rendezvous is an open mic. So anyone who's working on a rag, playing a rag, can come and sort of perform that music or ragtime adjacent music. And so we have first time people who've never performed, or people, you know, who used to know a rag but want to get it back going. And then the second hour is when we bring the world-class talent like Colin and the Incomparables. And so you get to sort of get this sense of community, and that we're all in this music together. And then you get to really bask in, you know, how professionals, you know, are playing this music right
mm-hmm.
now.
Colin, what keeps you and your band coming back to Ragtime Rendezvous?
I mean, it's one of the best places anywhere to play ragtime music. And that is not an exaggeration. I mean, you're a stone's throw away from Scott Joplin's house. You're in one of the most important cities in the world for ragtime, if not the most important city. And just the way that, you know, the audience receives it, the way that the space feels when you're playing in it, everything about it just feels so magical and perfect for the preservation of this music and creation of new voices in this music.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are thinking of joining you on Monday, what would each of you advise that folks come with, if not their own instrument, or maybe just that?
Ethan,
yeah, if you can play a rag, come and just know it's a safe space. We all levels are there and ready to go, and we have root beer and pretzels and peanuts, and just come ready to root on both amateurs and professionals alike, and bask in that ragtime matters in our town, and it's a great fun music.
Mm-hmm. And a final word for you, Colin?
Yeah, just echoing what Ethan said, just come and get ready to hear some great stuff and just be surrounded by a bunch of people who really, really love this music and are ready to share it and share the joy of it.
Mm-hmm. Colin Hancock and Ethan Linewind, thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great time on Monday.
Thank you.
For more information about the August 3rd concert featuring the Oliver Smith Incomparables, visit ragtimerendezvous.com. And for information about the St. Louis Ragtime Initiative, visit stlragtimeinitiative.org.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.